Since the year 2000, a mega drought has parched the western United States, the driest period in over 1,200
years. Cedar City and Brigham City both had their hottest summers on record.
The Yellow Lake fire burning in eastern Utah has grown to over 30,000 acres.
Snow is coming later in the season, and the weather is getting warm.
The Great Salt Lake has been shrinking.
It could have devastating consequences for Utah environmentally.
The 2024 water year included record-breaking temperatures and ongoing drought throughout the Intermountain West.
The effects of climate change very clear right now.
Climate change.
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 Okay, now that we're sufficiently terrified of what the future holds, who the heck is going to replace Mitt Romney in the Senate?
That might sound like a pretty radical pivot, but bear with us. There is a method to our madness. I'm Sean Higgins.
And I'm Sage Miller. This week on State Street, we're diving into the race for U.S. Senate, specifically on one critical issue both of the major party candidates have staked their platform on. Climate change.
Congressman John Curtis is the Republican in Washington, D.C., who has been willing to speak candidly about climate change. He founded the Conservative Climate Caucus in 2021. It now has 85 members.
His Democratic challenger is pro-skier and climate activist Caroline Gleick. She's super well-known in the outdoor sports world for her skiing and mountaineering feats. But since I'm a homebody and refuse to ever go skiing again, Sean had to tell me all about her accolades. Sorry, Blake.
So in one corner, you have a conservative climate king. In the other, a Utah powder-loving progressive. Both candidates believe climate change is real and caused in large part by us, the humans.
In a race that might otherwise be just like any other red state Senate contest, climate change gives us the opportunity to explore an important question on a topic Utah voters have said they care about.
So how are the two major party candidates in this race squaring off over climate change?
All right, Sean, hit me with some climate realness. The Democrats are usually the ones pounding the pavement and blaring the horn on climate change. The Republican Party has been more skeptical. Former President Donald Trump, the leader of the party, has definitely had his doubts.
All of this with the global warming and that, and a lot of it's a hoax. It's a hoax. I mean, it's a money-making industry, okay? It's a hoax.
You're not wrong. In broad strokes, it's pretty safe to say that's the case for most people on both sides of the aisle. But Utah is a little bit different.
How so?
Two things, the Great Salt Lake and our snowpack. Millions of Utahns have a daily visual reminder of the effects of climate change thanks to the shrinking Great Salt Lake. And although we've had a couple of really great winters, we also just went through a pretty terrible drought.
Oh yeah, I remember reporting on when some cities said their water tanks were close to dry, or when a lot of reservoirs cut off boat access in the summer because water levels were so low.
Yeah. 95% of our water comes from melted snow. So if it doesn't snow, we are, as the Utah kids say, pretty fricked. Also, there's a $2 billion ski industry that's built around snow being in the mountains each winter. And don't forget, the biggest winter sports extravaganza is coming back here in 2034. That would be the Olympics. So safe to say there's a lot of motivation to at least talk about how the climate is changing.
Okay, fair. This makes a lot of sense. But if Curtis and Gleick are both like, duh, the climate is changing and we should address this, what is there left to fight about?
Turns out, a lot. They faced off in a debate last week with third-party candidate Carlton Bowen. He's an independent American who is to the right of Curtis on most issues, especially climate. Bowen also went hard on Curtis being a former member of the Democratic Party. That is true. Curtis was a county-level Democratic official in the early 2000s before becoming a Republican. We'll get into Gleick and Curtis in just a sec. But I think Bowen really shows how many conservatives see Curtis's position.
My problem isn't with being a Democrat. My problem is getting elected as a Republican, but on several key issues, continuing to vote like a Democrat. He's mentioned that the climate is his main issue. This is more of an issue of the left, and he's very involved in the climate and going to the UN climate caucuses, which have an agenda that's harmful to Utahns. And so I think that it's not just the party affiliation, it's what that represents after being elected as a Republican.
Bowen aside, Curtis is still pretty popular among Utah Republicans. He won the four-way GOP primary for Senate with almost 50% of the vote, something he was keen to point out during the debate. But he's definitely in uncharted waters for a Republican when it comes to climate change. On the flip side, there's Gleick. She and other Democrats see Curtis's stance as pretty good acting.
Utah deserves a leader that will walk the walk, not just talk the talk. And so I've heard a lot of talk from the Conservative Climate Caucus, but I haven't seen much meaningful action. And at every opportunity, he has failed to vote for legislation that would meaningfully reduce pollution at scale.
So what did Curtis have to say about all that?
Well,
I think one of the problems with the climate movement on the left is this idea that you can never be good enough, right? That you can never be worthy enough, that you can never do enough to satisfy them, and then move the goalpost.
Democrats just don't believe him. And the issue of climate change still makes some Utah conservatives pretty uneasy. And let's not forget, we're a red state. Republicans are calling the shots and setting policy in Utah when it comes to climate.
Which is exactly why I went to the Conservative Climate Summit, hosted by Curtis, at Utah Valley University earlier this month.
I was going to join you on that excursion, but I threw out my back and couldn't walk. I did, in fact, blame climate change for that inconvenience. So thank you for taking one for the team, Sean.
If it's any consolation, I did not go to Dave's Hot Chicken in Orem for lunch out of respect for our friendship.
I was way more sad about missing our tradition than I was about missing the summit, if that's any consolation. By the way, State Street is not sponsored by Dave's Hot Chicken, but if you would like to sponsor us, give us a call.
Okay, back on track. I showed up because I wanted to know how Curtis is trying to get other Utah conservatives to think about climate change. In a nutshell, he says energy policy is climate policy, and conservatives should not be afraid of that conversation.
Based on your reporting I read while on muscle relaxers, Curtis says energy policy needs three things, right?
Correct, drugged sage. In Curtis's eyes, energy needs to be three things: affordable, reliable, and clean. But there's usually an Achilles heel.
If you're fossil fuels, what's your Achilles heel? Clean. They know that. That's not a surprise to them.
That ish is dirty.
Well, if you're nuclear, what's your Achilles heel? Affordability. We took a generation off of nuclear, and now, surprise, it's expensive when we try to get it going again.
That ish costs big bucks.
If you're renewable, let's be honest, what's your Achilles heel? Reliability. Storage.
Where are we going to store that ish?
Yep. There are major kinks that need to be worked out with how we generate and store energy before a utopian energy future becomes a reality. And frankly, Curtis has his own ish to work out too. While he is thinking about climate pragmatically, he needs to get more of his caucus on board.
And what about Gleick?
She is leaning hard on the urgency of it. The way she sees it, the slow and steady approach isn't a virtue when the world is on fire.
We can create jobs, lower utility costs, electrical bills. We can clean our air and save lives by accelerating our transition to clean, renewable energy while supporting our legacy energy-producing communities across the states. And we can ensure that the clean energy economy is built with American-led manufacturing and supports good-paying union jobs. But my opponent, Representative Curtis, his Conservative Climate Caucus, is nothing more than a fossil fuel-funded delay and distortion tactic. And delay is the new denial.
So the political landscape is different than it used to be. And this brings us to a new question. How have Utahns' priorities shifted on climate change?
We'll dig into that more right after a quick break.
Hi, I'm Caroline Ballard. We are throwing a lot at you this season of State Street. And if you have questions about the election or what is on your ballot, we are here for them. Literally, in person, at Fisher Brewing on October 23rd. Come for some trivia and stay for a Q&A session with us, the State Street team. Doors open at 5:30 and trivia starts at 6. The event is free, but you've got to sign up ahead of time. You can find that at KUER.org.
Support for State Street comes from the Hinckley Report on PBS Utah. I'm Jason Perry, director of the Hinckley Institute of Politics. The Hinckley Report is Utah's weekly political roundup, bringing together Utah's top journalists, political thinkers, and lawmakers to help you understand how politics impacts your life. Listen to the Hinckley Report wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to State Street. I'm Sean Higgins.
And I'm Sage Miller. Utah is a red state that is feeling the effects of climate change right now. Think the shrinking Great Salt Lake and the drought we just got out of.
Or the massive Yellow Lake fire that's still burning in eastern Utah. Over the past few years, Utah has gone through a little bit of a transformation on this issue.
To help us get a better handle on how this conversation has evolved, we turn to Sean Tigan.
Sean is the president of the Utah Foundation, a nonprofit policy think tank that publishes an annual priorities report that ranks the top issues on Utahns' minds. Climate issues like clean air and water are pretty high on the list. I asked him how the conversation around climate change has moved. Sean Tigan, you are the president of the Utah Foundation. Thank you so much for joining State Street. We appreciate it.
I really appreciate the opportunity to join you.
So let's talk about climate change in Utah. Is climate change a unique issue here in Utah specifically, and why or why not?
Yes. It's certainly not just happening here. But I think it's unique here in part because we have a gigantic lake that has potentially had some impacts from climate change and would likely continue to have those impacts into the future. And that would affect perhaps more quickly than in many places an effect on the community surrounding that Great Salt Lake.
How is climate usually discussed in Utah?
When people think about it, they probably often think about drought. And that's one big way to think about it over the past, since 2000 or whenever that big prolonged drought began. And it's like, water, whatever, okay, so I'm not supposed to water as much, or I'm not supposed to water when it's 106 degrees or whatever. But are we going to have enough snow for skiing? Skiing is an economic driver for the state. It's pretty important in many ways, not just for skiing, but for our water to make it through each summer and fall. It's a big deal. And I think that we probably talk about it in terms of some of those specifics. We may not talk about it quite as much in some of the other ways that it could affect us and maybe already affecting us in the near term.
We live in a red state. The Republican Party controls almost all the levers of power when it comes to government here. And the GOP has not been the party that traditionally has led the conversation on the effects of climate change. How do you see Utah Republicans talking about climate change and climate action right now?
Yeah. So I think we have a congressperson that is like making it okay.
We're talking about John Curtis.
We're talking about John Curtis. Wants to talk about this and wants to talk about it a lot and wants to talk about with other Republicans and other people in Washington, but also here and really trying to get that issue elevated. I think that that's super, super important. But even I would say spending time up at the legislature, even 15 years ago, there were people then that were up at the legislature holding office that thought about water issues. We're talking about climate change in a very frank kind of way, whereas maybe some of their colleagues are like, whoa, easy there. Let's not go that far. But, we eventually saw more discussion about it. But then when you get big steps with some big feet of John Curtis to talk about the issue, I think it becomes more acceptable for a broader range of people.
You brought up John Curtis. He's in a race for U.S. Senate right now against Democrat Caroline Gleick, who's presenting herself as a very climate-forward candidate herself. What do you think these candidates tell us about how this issue has evolved in Utah?
I think there is perhaps a time in the past where Gleick would be putting forth a climate-focused agenda and would have been thought of as a kook, and perhaps her Republican opponent would not have brought it up at all. You or like in the 2016 presidential election, you tiptoe around it or something, and you're like, we got to think about this. This is important-ish, but I'm not going to talk about it too loudly. Whereas now I think it is a little bit easier to not be afraid of it. you know, you could be a very conservative person and still have discussions around climate change issues and be very concerned about it and help do the Utah part in addressing it going forward.
Have the last two good winters shifted focus away from climate change? Do we have short-term memory when it comes to these types of things?
It is possible that we don't think about it that much. And that's what I think happens with the Great Salt Lake, because it's like we got that snow and things seem okay again. And we ultimately don't really want to change our behaviors. And we know, like I know very clearly that I can be climate zero. I can be carbon zero in every way. And that has 0.00, that has no effect on things. And so if we want to get things to change, it does seem like it's got to be at a higher level. Like in the policy world, you can change when there's a big thing that's forcing it. And maybe that big thing is a Great Salt Lake that's on the verge of collapse. And then like, let's do some things around that. Let's actually change water law that 10 years ago, I bet 99% of the people that think about water law will say, that will never change. We will let this state burn down first. And then here we go. And like 8 years later, it's like, what the heck? All right. Water rights are different than they used to be. And in a way that is pretty fundamentally important, at least in terms of moving forward to have more positive impacts in terms of the Great Salt Lake and other water resources around the state.
Looking ahead to the next 5 to 10 years, where do you see this conversation going?
I think that a lot more people are going to be talking about it, because I think there's going to continue to be very tangible things that people start getting perhaps a bit more worried about.
If we could paint with broad strokes and do some gross generalizations real quick. On one side of this argument, you have the world is ending. And on the other side of this argument, you have it's a hoax. Is that a healthy place to start a debate?
Yeah, right. Right. It's probably not beneficial to start on either side. But if you're of the it's the hoax side, you're not going to bring it up at all, A. But B, if you're on the this is the end of the world, we only have 2 years left on the planet before we all burn down or whatever, then it's like, then who cares anyway? Then what's the point? But maybe there's some middle ground where it's like, okay, it's happening and it's irreversible, but maybe there are things we can do in the future, and maybe we need to do them sooner in order to benefit the planet that our future selves are living on. It's in some ways unfortunate that we have to couch it in terms of like, what's your personal household economy going to benefit from it, or what's our state economy or local economy going to benefit from it, and not focusing on these in terms of like, how can we put our children in the best possible position to survive and thrive going forward? And are there things we should be doing now in order to do that?
Sean Tigan, thank you so much for joining us. We appreciate your insight.
Hey, thank you so much, Sean, for allowing me to be on the show. I've enjoyed it.
That was Utah Foundation President Sean Tigan.
It's kind of incredible that we are even here. Think back even 10 years ago, the idea of a race with climate change so front and center, or especially a conservative climate caucus, both those things might have seemed pretty far-fetched.
You're right. Curtis said as much to Salt Lake Tribune reporter Robert Gerke after the debate.
I think all of us would have said 4 years ago, 3.5 years ago when I started this, if there were 85 House Republicans who had signed up for a caucus that said the climate's changing and man's had an impact on it, we would have called that success. And I can tell you that all around the country, these 85 Republicans, when asked in town hall meetings if the climate's changing, instead of going to the default of it's a hoax, are now saying, let me tell you what I would do.
But just acknowledging human-caused climate change is real isn't enough for Gleick.
You heard it. To her, Curtis's climate caucus is a clever smokescreen that's just delaying action that needed to happen yesterday. Gleick wants to see more investment in clean energy now to save the planet, and because she thinks it's a smart money move for the future. Sure, it might be expensive up front, but it'll pay off in the future.
Whether you want to admit that climate change is happening or not, doing these things to transition to clean energy, they're good for the dollars and cents. They make good sense economically. They're good for our public health. They're good for the air quality. And there's an enormous cost of inaction. By failing to take action, we are only going to see worsening natural disasters. And it's going to cost our country trillions of dollars.
So I've got to ask, we've focused on this one issue of climate change. Is that really going to be the deciding factor in this race?
In my professional opinion, probably not. But as Tigan told us, the fact that a candidate like Gleick is on stage talking about climate change and not getting dismissed out of hand by the Republican candidate is telling. There's this thing in politics called the Overton window.
Ooh, do tell.
It's a term that's used to basically represent a range of policies that are seen as acceptable by the general population. And at least in Utah, that window is shifting toward more action on climate change.
That does it for this episode of State Street. I'm Sage Miller.
And I'm Sean Higgins. A few things to note. Voter guides are out for a few key county races in Salt Lake, Utah, Davis, Washington, and Weber counties. You can find those over at KUER.org.
And on October 23rd, we'll be at Fisher Brewing in Salt Lake City for election trivia and to answer more of your ballot questions. This is a 21 and up event.
State Street is a team effort. Kudos to the digital masters, Jim Hill, Raquel Davis, and Eleanor Gomberg.
David Childs and KUER News Director Elaine Clark are behind editing and production here at State Street.
And Caroline Ballard is our executive producer.
See you next week.
Ah, to you, Sean Higgins.
From KUER.